Welcome back to Screen Crush Rewind. I'm your host, Ryan Airy. We're a couple minutes late because I was talking with some old friends before this started, and I don't get to see these guys anymore. So I'm so excited to have people on and talk to you and talk to my friends about this new episode of X-Men. We're going to be talking about X-Men 97, Season 2, Episode 4, Rise of Apocalypse, Part 2. God, that's a mouthful. A lot happened in this episode. If you have not seen the episode, spoilers. We're talking spoilies the whole time. We're also, Mike, going to dive into a couple things about Kang and other implications for the future after this episode, whether or not the big death, again, spoilers, is real. But let's just get started, man. There's just so much to unravel here. First of all, you know him as the co-host of the Comic Book Club podcast and the guy who's always on hold, Mr. Alex Zalbin. What's up, Alex?
Not much. I'm actually on hold with Disney Plus right now. They say they're getting an onslaught of calls is the way they phrased it. I don't know what that means necessarily, but... I'm going to hang on while we're on.
If that's adorable. Cool. We're going to explain that to all you lame nerds out there who spent your youth playing sports and hooking up with babes.
Don't know what that's like. Comic books. If they could explain that to me, that would be great.
Now let's bring up the guy who's always on break. Can't believe I uttered the phrase hooking up with babes on Screen Crush. Mr. Tommy Bechtold. What's up, Tommy?
Janet, I've already apologized. I can't find all the surprise fireworks that I had set up to go off. We have to accept random explosions at the workplace are the new normal here. Ryan,
absolutely.
How are you?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm great. And hey, if the movie Flight of the Navigator taught me anything, it's very important to keep fireworks stashed just in case you need to signal an alien aircraft carrying
a
bomb.
I love that you brought that movie up. God, I love that movie.
It's actually, you know what? That should be a 4th of July movie. We were talking about 4th of July traditions, like Independence Day, of course, Missing in Action, which I think
Born
is,
on the 4th
Team
of
America.
July.
Born on the 4th of July. That old patriotic tale, Born on the 4th of July, of course. But actually, Fly the Navigator is a 4th of July movie. It should definitely be in that classification. And next up is a guy who was not alive when Flight of the Navigator was released in theaters and probably doesn't know what the hell we're talking about. The guy who's trapped in our TV but doesn't know it. So please don't tell him. Mr. Colton Ogburn. Hi, Colton.
Hi. I think Die Hard is probably my favorite 4th of July movie.
What about Die Hard 3? Doesn't that take place during the summer? I think that kind of counts.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah. And also, I want my shtick. I want my shtick to be that I am on hold with Janet.
Oh,
since I don't have a shtick.
Yeah. Why don't I have a shtick?
Talking about
what is it?
Have a shtick. Be quiet, Colton. You be quiet. Okay. Before we start talking about X-Men, we have news about another potential mutant that just dropped. I just saw this. I don't know if you guys have seen this yet. It's very cool. I just want to say from Screen Crush, big congratulations to Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, who was nominated for an Emmy for Outstanding Lead Actor in a Comedy Series.
Incredible.
Wonder Man.
That's awesome.
Got a big tier Emmy nomination.
Yeah.
I mean, that is.
Yeah. Also.
That's amazing.
What a meta thing to
happen to Wonder Man, like to get nominated for an Emmy for the show about a man who just so desperately wants to be a good actor
I'm definitely getting this wrong because I haven't looked it up. I know WandaVision got a slew of Emmy nominations, but there hasn't been much.
Moon Knight got some surprisingly, if
Moon
I
Knight?
Recall.
Yeah, I mean, surprising. I'm talking about like. Yeah, real acting. Nominations.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, real ones.
Yeah, not your
digital effects.
Not your tech stuff that they don't put on TV.
Did
WandaVision got Outstanding Limited or Anthology Series.
Right.
Outstanding Lead. This is from Google AI, so I don't know how much I can trust this. It won three Creative Arts Emmys. Outstanding Lead Actor, Paul Bettany. Outstanding Lead Actress in a Limited Series or Movie, Elizabeth Olsen. Catherine Hahn got Supporting. Matt, you got to remember, not much was coming out then either, but WandaVision obviously deserved all this. Matt Shackman got nominations. Jack Schaefer also got for writing. So yeah, WandaVision absolutely nailed it. I don't think...
Yeah, I know there was some talk. I don't remember whether Agatha All Along got nominated. I know there was talk because it was switching. It was being very cagey about whether it was a limited series or an ongoing series, so it could compete for ongoing series. But I don't remember if it actually got nominated in that or not.
Did Born Again Season 2 get anything?
maybe below the line stuff, but there really haven't been any big nominations since WandaVision blew up, as far as I recall. Well, so this is a big deal.
Moon Knight is an Emmy winner because they did
for sound edit. Yeah. And let's see, Don Cheadle, for some reason, got Outstanding Guest Actor in a Drama Series for
Those categories are so dubious at the Emmys, though. Like, sometimes Outstanding Guest Actor is on screen for like 10 seconds. It was like, I remember, was it like James Duty Gench?
Chadwick Boseman
was like on screen for a minute.
About Don Cheadle's performance in Falcon and the Winter Soldier. It's something that we talk about almost every day.
Oh, all the time, yeah. It's laid the seeds for Armor Wars and Secret Invasion, for sure.
It was the Scroll one, so no, it didn't. It was the Scroll one.
Remember It got a nomination, but it didn't win for X-Men 97, so no, this is pretty rare. And it's also just, if you think back on Wonder Man, like, they barely announced it. Like, it wasn't part of a big slew of announcements that Marvel did. The trailer was dumped at, like, in October at the last minute. They dumped the show in one day. Destin Daniel Cretton and the other producer had to, like, beg Marvel to not cancel production during the strikes. Mm. Unfortunately, somebody died during production. Like, this is a show that on paper just, how did this show, you know, almost get canceled, but Secret Invasion didn't, you know? Like, it's, I'm so happy. Once again, if you're just joining us, congratulations, Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, for his nomination for Outstanding Lead Actor on an Emmy on a limited series. Really incredible. And speaking of shows that deserve more awards and love, X-Men 97, guys. Damn. Episode 4, Rise of Apocalypse Part 2. I want to get into speculation and talk about the ending, which, again, this will be your last spoiler warning, where Magneto apparently dies, the Rise of Apocalypse, etc. But before we get into all that and the theory crafting and Kang of it all, I just want thoughts on the episode itself and on where we are these first four episodes. We haven't all been together in a while. Tommy, lay it on me, brother.
And I don't mean this as a dig on Supergirl at all, but it is amazing how this animated series can make us care about the villains so much. And like just the way we're able to, Marvel, I think, just does a better job than DC at this point, other than maybe some of the Batman movies, of like really getting you to like, kind of like see the entire situation for 360 degrees, like where you're like, I kind of get why Apocalypse is angry, and like life of like starts with abandonment. It's like they it's not subtle in any way, but like I'm enjoying it. It's funny, like I had kind of, so much has happened in my life and in movies since the first season that I kind of forgot what happened in it, other than Gambit's death. And just these first four episodes have been so nice to get back into that world. I think it's just so well done, from the music and the opening credits and the neat little thing where they do, what was it? X-Factor is the beginning of, or X-Force is the beginning X-Force, of episode
yeah.
two.
I love X-Force, that. Sorry.
It's great.
I just love
and all they had those apocalypse. Little details in it.
Yeah. Is the guy, yeah. And for somebody who, like, one thing I love about this show is getting to see all these different aspects of the comics that weren't that connected when they released. Mm-hmm. Like, in season one, they were able to take, like, Baby Nathan to Madeline Pryor to Inferno, and they made it part of, like, a more condensed story. That's one thing I really love about it. But, Alex, you know, what do you think about the series so far, especially as a comic reader perspective?
Oh, my God. I am loving it so much. It is so hard for me to divorce it in any way from my prime time reading comics that made me fall in love with comics, because it's just hitting on every single one of those plot lines. Often I wonder, watching the show, what does this feel like to somebody who has never read an X-Men comic and maybe never watched an X-Men cartoon? Because I can't separate that at all from how I feel about this. But just on a pure TV level, the first season of the show, excellent, but they very carefully took the first couple of episodes and, you know, kind of slow played it a little bit. The first were fun, they were setting the stage, and then once you hit that fifth episode with Gambit dying, it just was hardcore from there. It has hit the ground running from the beginning of this season. Just like, there's been no delay, no slow play. If anything, it feels like these next couple of episodes might be the, like, take a little break and have a little fun with some side adventures that eventually loop back to the Apocalypse thing, if I'm reading the tea leaves light. But just great. And today's episode, like Tommy was saying, what I think was so smart and so well done about this is you do feel sympathy for Apocalypse, but at no point is he not a villain,
right?
You know, he's still bad, and he is bad, and that's the whole point of Magneto and Xavier trying to appeal to him is, nope, there's really nothing to appeal to there. You know, his circumstances have led to this, but really he is somebody who is just a bad guy through and through. We're not going to get Apocalypse crying at the end of the season being like, I'm so sorry, you guys, but that's not going to happen. He's just bad. And the last little thing I'll say, and then I'll shut up for a second, is that I realized very specifically watching this episode, and this is also not to slag off anything else, but like, this show is giving me that haptic buzz of pleasure of, ooh, I remember that thing. Ooh, I know what that is. That I really have been missing from a lot of the live action MCU stuff for a really long time, where it started to feel like this exhausting obligation of like, okay, that's leading to the next thing. Or maybe it's not. Maybe they won't pick up on it. I don't know. But here, all the little things that pop up through the episode, not to list all of them, but like the Kang of it all, him being like, you need something external. I'm like, I know what that is. This is fun.
And she's an external. She was in the episode with Gambit and the Thieves Guild. And the show's great at giving us little tiny connections like that. Like when John DeLancey, by the way, casting Q as Kang is perfect. When John DeLancey says this place is like an axis of time, a time of axis or axis of time, it's calling back to the axis of time from the original show. So if you've seen those original episodes, you get this extra little dopamine hit of like,
Or but even beyond that, like the mid-credit scene where it's just referencing basically a cover from an issue of Uncanny X-Men. Like there was that classic Chris Claremont, Jim Lee issue where it isn't even, if I remember correctly, Black Widow, Captain America, and Wolverine teaming up at all. It takes place in two timelines. So you get Wolverine with Captain America, and then later on Wolverine with Black Widow when she's an adult. It takes place when she's a kid at the first half of the issue.
Wait, I'm sorry. I have to interject real quick. My Disney Plus just skipped me from episode to episode. Are there post-credit scenes in this show?
Just in this episode, yeah.
Just this episode. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Sorry. Yeah. It's a shame they did that. They should never,
But, like, just anyway, and again, for real, I'll shut up after this. But, like, seeing that, I was like, I know that cover, and it has nothing to do with the plot of the comic book, but it's just a fun little thing that they make work for the show in a fun way, and that's it. It's great.
Why else bring Black Widow into it? You know, and like she's not, and by the way, voiced by Lake Bell, just like the character was in What If. So it's like this cool little multiverse tie-in where they brought her back for that as well. I could keep going too. I got stuff to say too. But Colton, what are your thoughts on the episode?
It was good. It was really good.
So
it's the best so far. I mean, I really liked the first three as well, but this fourth one really had me like engaged like it, and I'll admit it, and I don't like this about myself, this is a flaw I have, is I'm kind of a hard sell, I think, when it comes to animated shows. I don't know why, I just, it's hard for me to get into it. I don't like that about me, but I'll admit it. X-Men 97 always manages to suck me right in. and
you didn't grow up with the original show, right? Like that was not part of your...
I mean, I saw it some on like Fox Kids or whatever, I think, like reruns when I was a kid. But no, not like a religiously, you know, I'm more so like Batman the Animated Series and Spider-Man Animated Series.
Well, it's interesting though, because contemporaries of X-Men, and they all sort of at the same time were raising this bar for animation on Saturday mornings.
Right.
Okay, so, like I said, so much to talk about here. As far as the episode itself... I'll lay this out there. I don't really like Apocalypse that much as an overall villain for this series. But I mean, we can dive into that in a second. As far as the episode itself, I love when they're able to take things from the original series. Like there's a one-off line Apocalypse has where he says, like, I am the rock from the shores of eternity. And then they find the source of that here, where the Celestial tells it to him. Do you guys think it works to have, like, what did you think about these connections to the Celestials and Kang and this inevitability of Apocalypse and the whole where the end is the beginning? What aspects of that are you really digging? And, you know, just what are your thoughts on it?
Time travel stuff is super complicated all the time. And I think particularly here when you're dealing with time loops and causality and everything, it's very tricky to nail. I'm almost hesitant to respond to the question just because I feel like it all depends on how the season wraps up. Like how much of this is a time loop? Do they beat Apocalypse? How do they beat Apocalypse? if it is inevitability, then it's already done. There's no stakes there because whatever they have done is what they're already doing. I think based on experience with the X-Men, I will stop making X puns accidentally in a second, but there's going to be a change there, and then it'll make it worse for the X-Men, and they'll be in a much worse place because of whatever they figure out in terms of changing time. But in general, I'm just not a fan of time loops because, like I said, there's not there. It's already it is inevitable. It's already done.
Well, there is one different thing to this too. So Apocalypse has been defeated forever more than once. Like in the Beyond Good and Evil arc, he was basically erased from existence, but then his spirit persisted and resurrected again. The one thing that's different about this is Cable and Mother Ascani, and she says there's a prophecy that the one who will defeat Apocalypse will be birthed in the cradle that first created him. And we see that in this episode where young Nathan goes to Ship and he gets Ship's consciousness put in him, which, you know, if you're a comic fan, that's the professor. There's all these other things from the original series that ties into. So there is that. There is like, okay, wait, Cable is the key here, which also means that could be why Genosha was this event that had to happen. It could be why Madeline Pryor had to happen. The same virus that infected him to begin with was created by Apocalypse. So Apocalypse was very much created by Cable and by Sinister, and all these things sort of create each other. Cable could be the thing that breaks the wheel, though. What do you guys think of that? Is there a way that could happen?
I think so. I mean, in the original animated series, they've gone up against Apocalypse a few times, right? Like you were just mentioning, like they defeated him, wiped him from existence.
Four arcs, I think, in the show.
I think it'd be interesting if they revisit maybe some of that in this season, like show what's changed. I think what's impressive with this show is I'm kind of, and I think we all are, kind of, I'm already not a big fan of time travel stuff because I get it too in my own head about it.
Oh, but, I love it.
Yeah. Well, it's fun. Yeah. But I think what this show is doing is it's actually making it work, even in a time where kind of the multiverse and time travel and different timelines is getting a little exhausting. They're actually doing it well. And what was your question? Are they going to?
Do you think Cable can be, like, can Apocalypse actually be defeated? How can Cable break the loop?
Well, does he break until the loop? Until they decide they want to bring him back again. Sure. Yeah.
That's the problem.
I think. Yeah.
Well, here's my thing. I mentioned this a second ago. Go ahead, Alex.
No, I was just going to throw out to you, this is almost definitely not true, but I always get very suspicious whenever I hear a prophecy, particularly when we're like, oh, it's this prophecy. It's definitely about Cable, that they're trying to trick us in some way. So what if the one who defeats Apocalypse is En-Saba-Nur, and they do loop back to that, and this thing that Magneto and Xavier have set up at the beginning somehow pays off at the end? I don't know how that works, but it could be.
I love that. I was having that same thought watching episode 4. I thought, oh, Magneto's actually going to flip this guy and they're going to like take him to the future with them and he's going to help them fight Apocalypse. But then that didn't happen. Maybe it still can. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Well, the thing about X-Men time travel stories is the time is malleable in the X-Men universe. Days of Future Past is about changing the future. There is an episode where Bishop makes a change. He fixes this mutant plague, but then that causes a time vortex that destroys Cable's future. And for some reason, even though Cable's future sucks, he wants to preserve it. So he goes back in time to stop Bishop. So there are certain events that will really screw time up and rupture it and change them. Other things are inevitable. And as we see in this episode, Apocalypse is inevitable, which I think is a shame because I think Apocalypse kind of sucks. I've been reading a lot of Apocalypse comics lately. He's a better villain in concept than he's ever been in a story. Now, I haven't read all of them. I'm up to like Uncanny X-Force. That's a really good run. But for the most part, it's always the same thing. I am really old and ancient. I have not conquered the Earth yet, even though I was alive before other mutants were. And I am eternal. Oh, darn, I've been defeated. I will be back soon. There's never any nuance to him. And even the comic book Rise of Apocalypse that these episodes are based on, I don't like that much. I don't like the art. I've read the book like 3 times and I always miss things because the art is just not my jam, man. It's like weird and convoluted and everything's characters are distorted. It doesn't grab me the way a story about like Magneto would, for example.
So are you going to be disappointed if it becomes clear that the Mutant Saga is leading to that for like phase three of the Mutant Saga, like an Apocalypse type thing.
I actually wouldn't be disappointed because I think Apocalypse is great in concept. He's a great idea for a character. I just personally have never read a Marvel comic where I was like, this is the Apocalypse story. This is great.
Well,
whereas I can tell you like so many great Magneto stories. I can tell you great stories about the Shi'ar, mm-hmm. about the Brood. They all have their great arcs. And I don't think Apocalypse never really grabbed me that much. He's always just somebody who they say he's a big threat, but he looks stupid. He's got a big A on his tummy. Like, it's weird. You know, like, he's
I do love that. Guy. So I love that so much that he has a big
A. He comes out of the chamber.
He's a Care Bear. Yeah. Is what yeah. he is.
I have a question for the more comically book literate folks here. What is the usual means of defeating Apocalypse in the comics? Like, how do they usually end up vanquishing him? Is it just like they trap him somewhere?
Love.
It really is just physically beating him because his whole thing is survival of the fittest. So if they prove themselves more fit, he's like, well, got to back off.
He's a reasonable, insane person. He's like,
or he gets back in ship and he's like, basically like, next time, X-Men, next time.
They show him like, as we said, we're already doing spoilers, but like the fact that he kills Magneto and could very easily kill Charles Xavier, but doesn't in that moment. And it's just kind of like,
Dope.
He's like, it's not right for me to kill you because you're too weak right now. Like, yeah. he does have that strange code, but when
he stepped over him, I was like, that was a flex.
To Ryan's point, and to add my own spin on that, I think one of the things that makes him a difficult villain in this is his size and power. Like, it's always kind of like he's just this giant monolithic thing, and it's like, well, how do you defeat that? And then I guess beat it into submission is the answer, but that's just not a super interesting thing to me. I guess the brute beatdown nature of it is there are villains that I think have creative weaknesses.
You made a great point that I missed in the breakdown, which is the reason he doesn't kill Charles is because it defies his philosophy of survival of the fittest. I want to point something out, though. We just made this for our merch store. In fact, Colton's wife, Remy, did this. It's our tribute to this moment. I played the devil to drive sinners to the saints. This is at our store, screencrushmerch.com, where right now we are running a 15% off sale on all of our superhero parody merch. So you get things like the Screen Crush variant hoodie. This is one of our all-time best shirts. It's the X-Men and the Nighthawks Diner by comics artist Mike Spears. Our Deadpool shirts, LFG, and Can You Tell Me How to Get to the MCU? Frasier Beast. Colton, you designed this one. It's one of my favorites. We've also got the classic, one of the best all-time shirts we've ever done. Remember It. It's a great shirt. I'm about to make a name for myself. And we have many, many more. Of course, we also have Don't Be What They Made You, the Still of Logan's Grave. And if you become a store member, you earn rewards to get free stuff. And if you're a Screen Crush member at our $5 tier, you get an additional 15% off. So for now, until the early part of August, 30% off all superhero merch at our store using our code for $5 members.
And can I say
those are all below? Yeah.
Can we pull up the new one again? The helmet.
Yep.
Yeah. Guys, as Ryan said, my wife designed this or drew this. And I got to hold my son for the first time yesterday.
Wow.
2.5 months in.
While she designed this.
Yes. It was a great experience. Great guy. Can't wait to do it again.
Great guy.
Oh, but seriously, how did Ben feel about Yahya Abdul-Mateen II getting his Emmy nomination? Was that something he was proud of?
He was excited. He tried to talk about that a little bit, but I was kind of disinterested. You know, I didn't want to talk work. And can I also just add, I think talking about Apocalypse and all that, you know what I think is going to really sell you on the MCU version of Apocalypse, Ryan? Mm-hmm. I think what you do, because, you know, you have the Egypt thing and all that. You bring in Moon Knight and you have the greatest hero die.
Moon Knight's in the second.
And then you have Oscar Isaac's Moon Knight, who just played the greatest hero. You then have him reprise his role as Apocalypse. And you have him come out on stage, and he's got a new face, the same case to make.
Same case.
Oh, no. Oh, God. How long have you been sitting on that? Gee, some things you just got to keep under your butt, man. I was
going to say new mask, same task, but then I was like, wait, Apocalypse doesn't wear a mask.
Yeah. No. We'll ride with it. That would be, but for real though, I do think Apocalypse could actually work in the MCU. He could, like, the design elements that made him look silly in the movie and in the cartoon, they'll obviously make look cool, but he is somebody who I think on paper should be awesome. He's a shapeshifter. He's immortal. But I'm always just like, even like what Alex just said, how do you beat him? Hit him a bunch. You know, like there's
you give him a walloping.
There's no nuance to the guy. You can't reason with him. He has no. And Tommy, earlier you talked about how DC or Marvel characters always have the shading that DC doesn't. And Rise of Apocalypse is kind of unique because it does offer that shading. I guess the recent Sword of X storyline did it too. But Apocalypse normally is a pretty one-note villain who I think talks a big game and ultimately isn't that interesting. So I don't know. Do you guys think he'll be the main villain for the rest of the season? And who else are we going to see along the way?
I was pretty convinced last episode that they were going to do a little bit of a feint and it was actually going to be Kang as the big villain. But now with this episode, I do think it's Apocalypse for sure all season long. I just wanted to take like a little step back to back up what you're saying, Ryan, that from a design perspective, I actually thought En-Saba Nur is a better animated design and more interesting and more terrifying than Apocalypse. And I understand why they went for Apocalypse, and I understand why they went for the voice of Apocalypse, because that's from the original animated cartoon. But when he suits up and gets his more cartoony face
and is talking more like Skeletor,
I was like, I'm not as quite into this. So I wish they had made a change. I wish they hadn't been so faithful to the original animated series, taking a bigger swing to change it up a little bit.
And Ross Marquand did a great job.
Oh yeah,
imitating the Apocalypse from the original series, but he's still, you know, he's just that's what he is. Like Apocalypse is. He is, I guess, the MCU version of Darkseid, who apart from Thanos, you know what I mean? Like he's a force of destruction.
I agree that he looks and sounds way cooler as just En-Saba Nur. Way cool. It would have been cool if we got to see, I mean, not to rewrite the whole season for them, but like if he kind of saw his future and was like, nah, I'm going to be even worse. And like embraces like something just, and they just screw shit up even more. Yeah.
Well, you know, it would be more interesting if he learned from his failures, right? If he had this weird like ability to see the future and see how he screwed up and saw that it was like he had to maybe be more than just a brawler. You know, he had to evolve and be a bit more of a sorcerer or something like that. And I think that would make him more difficult to defeat as well.
Can I throw out one thing that popped to me in the episode just off of that? I do think, this is pure speculation prediction, but like I do think they are going to take some stuff from these En-Saba Nur scenes so it isn't just pure Apocalypse cackling villainy. Specifically, and I hope they follow up with this, I really felt like that scene where En-Saba Nur sits down with Rogue at the fire is something they have to follow up on, because I think we all know that he's going to turn, probably, almost definitely, Gambit into Death, the Horseman of the Apocalypse.
Yeah.
I kind of got the feeling from that scene that it'll be like, look, I did this for you, Rogue. Isn't that you wanted? And that's going to destroy her even further.
In episode 2, his horsemen have a coffin, but we don't see whose coffin it is. So that's why I think you're 100% right. And by the way, also kind of a boring story when Gambit becomes Death in the comics, but just throwing that out there. Sorry, Colton, go ahead.
It would be lame if they give Apocalypse a face turn, right? We don't want that.
But because there's no motivation for it. You know, like in the comic, at least, Rise of Apocalypse, he does kind of fall in love with this woman who's, you know, Ozymandias' sister. And, you know, there's a little bit of a thing there. But here it's like he just says, no, I am committed to this philosophy.
I can't hear that without thinking of Breaking Bad. Go ahead.
Ozymandias.
There is Watchmen in the comics, and I don't think they're going to do this at all, but just talking about good Apocalypse storylines, a couple of years back they started this storyline based on the island of Krakoa, and it completely redid everything with the X-Men, where mutants were kind of coming from a survival of the fittest direction. So Apocalypse was actually part of the society. And it was, as a reader, it's always like a very weird thing to see Apocalypse just sort of hanging out there with Cyclops and Professor X and Magneto and everybody else. But it was really interesting because they've decided, no, actually, mutants are superior. We're not going to dominate humans, but let's figure out how to make mutants even better. And Apocalypse was a big part of that. It led into this great wild storyline called X of Swords, where he met Apocalypse's wife from a alternate Krakoa called Arako. They go there. It's just a big fight tournament with all of the X-Men and these new characters. So again, I don't think it's anything they're going to do at least this season on the show, maybe season four or something like that. But if they do want to take another direction, I think that's how you flip potentially Apocalypse into maybe not a good guy, but aligned with the
X-Men. And you didn't mention it, but the whole thing with that I liked about Apocalypse and X of Swords, I can't believe how much I liked X of Swords. Like, compared to some of the other stuff in the Krakoa arc, it's one of my favorites. There's a whole thing where the reason that this island split, it had demons on it, so they split the island, and his wife basically went with the demon island and his kids to, you know, fight off the demons. And the last thing she says to him is, make sure the earth is strong enough to survive what's to come. Which does add a philosophy that, kind of like Dr. Doom, Apocalypse is trying to protect the world from an even greater threat. And that is the first time I thought Apocalypse was actually interesting as a character and not just as a foil for people like Cable. Sorry, Cole, go ahead.
You know what was also dope in this episode was they did that whole, like in the Ahsoka series, when we see Anakin walking through the smoke and it flashes and you see the Vader silhouette. They did that with in Sabinor and Apocalypse.
That was three,
Oh, yeah, that wasn't... Yeah. Sorry, I binge-watched.
That's okay. Yeah, they blur together, the thing about the Krakoa arc that could be interesting, because there's been other... You know, I want to talk about where you guys think this is going to go next. We'll get to Magneto's resurrection in a second. But when you look at, like, great X-Men storylines and great villains, season one really surprised me because I did not think they were going to do Bastion. That's a pretty obscure storyline they pulled from, and it's way better than it was in the comics. But you bring up a good point about Krakoa. I think if they do Krakoa, it's got to be Krakoa, like from the start, like do it from the first episode. But it is a way to kind of go sideways against the Apocalypse thing. What if Xavier walks away from this going, we have to change? You know, he is inevitable. We have to become inevitable. It would be a different way to go about it than the comics, but it could be an interesting direction for them to go. Where else? Like, I don't think we're going to have Apocalypse in every single episode. I don't even know if he'll be the ultimate villain this season. You guys have any other villains or plot lines or stories you think we can see next before we get into Magneto's resurrection?
Well, they'll have like some... I was going to say, they're going to have like a small scrap with X-Factor, obviously, right? Like, there's going to be like kind of the X-Men versus the...
And maybe X-Force. Maybe all three will, you know, be in an X-War.
How many episodes is this season? Is it 10?
Nine. No, it's nine episodes. Yeah.
Oh, so we're about, I mean, we're about halfway through. I mean, I guess Onslaught would be the only thing that could come in, really.
Yeah. I was dancing around it, but yeah, we can talk
Onslaught. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
No, I mean, I think... I had read, I don't know how much truth there was. This was like Reddit talk, so I don't know where it came from. But there was some talk about like the people saying the original storyline for the season was heading towards Age of Apocalypse, which I kind of thought they were going to go towards this episode, which for anybody who hasn't read it, it's a dark future where Apocalypse rules. So we kind of got that. What? Dark Present. Yes, thank you.
Yeah. I love that.
It's very complicated to get there, and I don't know how they would do it necessarily with Magneto dead and people in different timelines, and I don't think it makes sense. They would have to come up with a new riff on it. But the thing that I read was that was supposed to be the 10th episode, and then they cut it off, so they're going to head somewhere else. I think Onslaught, who is best described as a mind baby between Professor Xavier and Magneto.
Let's talk Onslaught. Let's get there.
Yeah. I mean, that's a storyline that I never liked because it really just felt like editorial dictate to get to another place. And basically what it is, like, this is the short version. Professor X and Magneto have this percolating mind baby that grows up into a big thing with the powers of Professor X and gigantic armor that looks like Magneto. It essentially consumes Franklin Richards to get cosmic power. But the whole point of it was to kill off the Fantastic Four and the Avengers and send them to a new universe called Heroes Reborn, where they could start with a fresh continuity and fresh look. It sucked. The only thing that was good about it is it realigned the X-Men as not villains, but hated by the world because everybody saw it was clearly like a gigantic Magneto Professor X who killed all the heroes, and they blamed the X-Men for that. So they went back to a place of being hated and feared by the world at large that made a lot more sense than everybody being like, I can see your genetic structure and what's going on there. That's why I hate you. So I could see them 100% going either at the end of this season or potentially next season in that onslaught direction, merely to set up the X-Men in a place where they're hated. Otherwise, they could jettison everything about the storyline because it was really just to launch a new publishing line from Marvel.
Well, what a bad publishing line too. You did leave out something really important, and that is Onslaught was born basically in X-Men 25 when Xavier erases Magneto's brain. Now, in episode 9 or 10 last season, I think it was 9. No, it was 10. I'm sorry. When he actually goes, like, Xavier attacks Magneto, but instead of stealing his mind and turning him into like a blank slate, he goes into his mind and they go to a bar and they reason, they talk things out. Which is one of the reasons I hope Magneto stays dead, but we'll get to that in a second. It could, but they kept showing that moment in the opening credits. Like, that's been in the past two opening credits, which makes me think they are definitely laying the groundwork for Onslaught to remind us of that. So, and maybe it'll be better than it was in the comics, like Bastion was.
Yeah, I was about to ask. I remember when we were covering the first season that there was some kind of Onslaught tease. Or I remember doing that's a video where we were like, are they really about to do? I think I was on a talkback with Mike Lawrence. I think he was kind of like, God, I hope not. I think you were there too, Tommy.
Yes.
Like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. And Mike also, not a fan of Apocalypse. Anyways, go ahead.
No, I was just going to add on your Apocalypse complaints, Onslaught is that times 10, because really, despite the weird origin, there is nothing going on other than he is a large guy that everybody has to punch a lot. But that said, I think the show has done a really good job of picking and choosing moments from X-Men history so far, from the comic book history, and figuring out ways to make them work better, to make them work cleanly. It doesn't work across the board. I was a little bummed out that they took Inferno last season and jammed it into one episode. One of my favorite crossovers of all time. But they tried it. You know, they tried remixing it and figured out a new way to talk about it through the continuity of the animated show. So if they've got a good idea with Onslaught, I'm all for hearing them out, I guess.
I would love to see, you know, we're getting this, Tommy, you kept talking about, like, the expansion of different teams and things like that. And we've got New Mutants that are floating around. It seems like that they're not going to do the New Mutants. They rush straight to X-Force. But there's great storylines in the New Mutants comics. You know, you can bring in Warlock. You can do the Demon Bear, which was the subject of the New Mutants movie, which I finally watched. It really sucks. Yeah, there's a lot of things out there that they could probably touch on. Tommy, I'm sorry. Were you about to say something?
No, I was just agreeing with you about the New Mutants.
I meant before that. Strife is the villain I keep going back to. Strife is this clone of Cable who also has psychic powers. He thought he was the original and that Cable was the clone. Apocalypse raised Strife in the distant future to be his new vessel. He's got a bone to pick with Sinister and Apocalypse and Scott, Jean, and Cable. And he actually has a cameo in season 4. He's one of the psychics that Magneto kidnaps. I kind of thought they were building up toward him as more of a big bad, or maybe he's the hidden big bad like Bastion was last season.
Are we looking over Kang? Could it be? I feel like that was the last time we're going to see Kang this season, except for maybe some kind of stinger in the last episode. But
I feel like it might be the last time we see Kang, but that could just be me. Yeah.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Exclamation point.
This is me being way too, like, way too deep in it. Do you think there's any possibility, given the timing and the amount of time it takes to build an animated show, that when they started this season 2-3 maybe more years ago, that they were like, oh, this will line up really nicely with Kang Dynasty?
Bo DiMaio wrote these scripts before he was fired and they reworked
them. Think they probably even, because I know we see Immortus in the original series. I wouldn't be surprised at all if the original plan was for the for Ramatut to look more like Jonathan Majors, like be a 100%. Black man and like have the same facial structure. Yeah.
1,000,000%. No doubt in my mind. And the fact that we saw him in the original series doesn't matter because it's the multiverse. He just looked like a comic accurate white dude. who shapeshifts. Yeah. So maybe that's not what he actually looks like. He turns from like a weird little guy into, you know.
They could George Lucas it, go back and change it. Yeah. But
Jonathan, there are many things in the animated series they should change before that, though. That season five animation was
imagine rough. They did that, just like live action Jonathan Majors at the end of that.
But it should be it should be him falling out of the window on that Daily Wire movie that he did.
Oh, can't wait to see that. That's
falling out of the Citadel. Doom pushes him through the glass.
Do you guys think Magneto is really dead, or should he be really dead?
No one ever really dies.
I think he is really dead in the continuity of the show. Like, even though they didn't show it on screen, I think the point was you saw his skeleton, you know, coming through. He was atomized, except for the helmet. But they're dealing with time travel. So, of course, he's going to come back in some way at the end of the season. But I do wonder if it's a version of Magneto that is realigned to villainy to sort of get back to that opening credits, the two teams clashing.
Well, and I wonder if Charles will demand that, right? Like, that's the natural, like, order of things or whatever, not to use a phrase used for evil, but it's like, it kind of like, if we are resetting things, it's like Magneto needs to be more inclined to, like, bend the will of humans to
the mutants. And go back to our shirt. Yeah, that's what he played the devil, so people, whatever, the saint, I can't remember the quote. It's a good quote. What is the line?
One of my favorite Magneto stories they haven't done yet is when one thing they could do in the show, like, okay, the X-Men are all back. I think one thing they would do, like, if you follow the Grant Morrison run of the comics, which we've seen the trailers, they adopt these uniforms, is it became a true school with, like, dozens of students, and they really leaned into that. And now you have all the X-Force kids that they've rescued. I think that's where they'll go the rest of the season. And the best story in that, there was a character who turned out to be Magneto in disguise the entire time. And it was this giant, I mean, bro, it's one of those comics where when you read it, there's a reason I'm not saying the character's name. When you read it, you remembered where you were when you read it. Like, that was such a cool reveal that Morrison and Quietly put together. That's one storyline they haven't done with him. But, like, I said this in our breakdown. So Magneto was evil. And then he, in the original series, kind of went back and forth. He was like, oh, Charles, maybe we could work together. We teamed up this once. And then in the last episode of the show, he decides to not lead a mutant army so he can save his best friend. There was another episode where he was going to create a mutant in Haven. Then it fell apart and he was depressed and grew a beard. And then he was a good guy at the start of last season. He was a bad guy. And now he's a good guy again. It's a slingshotty thing where I think they gave him a perfect ending. And it's kind of like the movies. You don't have to bring him back every time. It's possible to tell an X-Men story without Magneto in it.
So I'll just throw out there, this is obviously Bo DiMeo did some not so great things, but to put it lightly, but I think based on the way that he talked about the show, if he was still in charge of the show, Magneto would be dead. Like, that would be that true cost and just move forward from there. With the new guys in charge, I don't know. You know, I don't know how much they care about that necessarily, letting dead mean dead, even though I think we know Gambit is going to come back in some form anyway. But I think there's still a couple of possibilities that don't negate that sacrifice there. One of them, I don't remember how this happens in the comics, to be perfectly honest with you, but there is a clone of Magneto named Joseph who comes back younger. That is a way that they could bring back and throw them in there. I think the more likely possibility is if they change and wreck time and we do head towards a Age of Apocalypse situation, that's a great stinger for the last episode where they're like, we got to fight back against Apocalypse. We got to fix time. And then Magneto comes out as like, I agree. Probably not with that voice, but something like that.
Well, especially if they...
Me too.
I agree.
Hi, gang.
Hi, Magneto. Hello.
It's your old pal, Eric. We're going to fight Apocalypse together. Let's go.
Jesus Christ. I think that to answer your question, he is dead. Like, he got vaporized. He's dead. But you can really easily just say that, okay, that past, he died in that past, in that timeline. And if that gets rewritten to where it never happened, then I mean, you can bring him back, no problem. So
going back to Krakoa, that's a main part. Like, the book itself is a commentary on the fact that comic book characters never actually die because they have resurrection protocols in place for every character. So the mutants, literally, it's a new superpower. Basically, they can't die. I don't know. I think he's in Charles's mind. I think that that's where we'll have that character appear. Maybe he won't realize that's what's going on. He'll like see a vision of him talking to him. The Age of Apocalypse thing would be great. That storyline kind of they did in the episodes One Man's Worth. I actually don't know if that comic, if that episode came out before or after the Age of Apocalypse comics. I feel like it was right at the same time. But yeah, I would love to see that alternate present where Magneto leads the X-Men. Yeah, what?
Poor Rogue. She's going to be really upset. Like, his Gambit's gone, and now Magneto too. Is there any scenario if he's, if we think that he's going to bring back Gambit, do you think, since Apocalypse killed him, maybe Apocalypse can resurrect him? Maybe he absorbed him or something, and he could be one of his horsemen?
Could have, maybe. It's not usually how it works in the comics. I do think the one lesson we should take from this is don't date Rogue. There is, she was already pretty low on the list of people you'd want to go out with, but this definitely means that she's cursed. So never. Yeah. Never
is it bad that that just makes me want her more now? I could change her.
We got.
Let's make a pact, guys. See which of us could date Rogue before graduation day.
You'll need a full body condom. But,
that always makes me think of that gag in The Naked Gun. But anyways, we got a couple of super chats to get to. Before we do that, as far as Magneto's return, other villains that could pop up, other timelines, one thing I thought this episode did is like the fact that it made Apocalypse so inevitable is it does make me go, gosh, what's interesting then? You know, Alex, you touched on this earlier. And I'm kind of wondering like, well, going back to like where they were originally going to go with this, I do think, like you said, they were going to tie this closer into Kang. I think maybe Kang could have been an overarching villain. And Colton, I know we're working on a video about this, but like, is there an avenue here where that we Marvel kind of goes, yeah, this Kang is a time travel guy. Like we will use Kang in the future. Do you think this show's given us a template for the return of Kang? And does it even indicate that he has a role in Secret Wars?
Was that at me or?
I don't know. Whoever wants to talk about Kang. Let's go, buddy.
Watch my video. No, I have a hard time thinking that, I mean, this show is really popular, but I am hesitant to say like what they're doing in this show is going to have any like actual like connection to the films. And I think originally when they were pitching the idea of this show, didn't Feige like say in an interview that they were considering having this be like in the MCU or like more closely connected to the, like the MCU multiverse, but then they decided, no, we need to go like and just make it more its own thing.
A little bit. That's a little bit of a reach, but he did talk about how it was connected. Yeah.
Yeah. I like it as more of its own thing that can just stand on its own, whether the MCU is thriving or not thriving, and just kind of be its own thing. But it could be a good test run, I think, for potential stories they want to tell, how people respond. I would love to see Kang and Apocalypse in the Mutant Saga and do some time travel stuff. Have the Fantastic Four go back to ancient Egypt, run in with
Ramatai. Technically, they were there during this episode, according to the comics.
Yeah.
Like, and they could were all do in the same space.
Yeah, and I've always thought they should recast Kang. I don't know why they are so hesitant to recast characters, but I think if you do it post Secret Wars, then it kind of comes off more so less like a Jonathan Majors, this Kang recast. And it comes off more just like a reboot recast. You know what I mean? Like it's almost a completely different character. And he won't even feel connected to the Jonathan Majors drama. So I do think that's a direction they could take it post Secret Wars. I don't know that they bring Kang in for Doomsayer's Secret Wars.
But you know, it's interesting because Charles met Kang, basically. He doesn't know that it's Kang. In this universe, the Avengers exist. Maybe they fought Kang before. If you're talking about Apocalypse being inevitable because of time loops and shit, Kang is your guy. Kang is the one person who probably could, because he created the Axis of Time. He built that temple that we see in season four that's, you know, probably the Temple of He Who Remains. Maybe there is something there where you don't bring in John DeLancey to do one episode. You actually use him later on as they go to him for help against Apocalypse or one of his variants. And there's also, they didn't technically reveal who Mother Ascani is. That's a character, her younger version still has to be introduced in this universe.
There's also cool stuff they could do with, I mean, they're doing Young Avengers. They could, isn't Iron Lad Kang, right? Am I remembering that right?
Yes, yeah, Teenage Kang, yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's that option.
I think they keep them separate. I think they keep X-Men 97 in its own continuity, even if it's going to be on a Disney Plus rail somewhere as part of the multiverse saga. So they could do their own Kang and run with it. Ryan, I think you're right that in a well-structured season of TV, we come back to Kang and the Celestials and everything as a way of wrapping up this problem with Apocalypse. But we'll see. There's a lot of other X-Men stuff that could happen, potentially.
That just reminded me when you said that. Ryan, do you remember, I can't remember if it was you, me, or Pavel, but we had I think it was me. We had that video about the Celestials and like Kang working. It feels like this season two is finally picking up. Yeah, it feels like this season two is finally picking up on all of that stuff. We're like, oh, this is going to happen. And then, you know, went off the rails. But it feels like X-Men 97 might be I don't want to say the trash heap, the void that all of that old stuff is falling into. Yeah. And we're actually getting to see it pan out like on the
small screen. Maybe it was all more integrated to begin with. Like you said, like, you know, Bodomeo had these scripts written a long time ago. I don't remember if the strikes really stopped the show from working or if because they were voiceover actors, if they were exempt, but definitely Marvel's had a lot of things that have ground everything to a halt. I don't know. I hope, like I said, I hope Magneto stays dead. I want to see the X-Men evolve without him. I want to see Charles evolve without him. There are a litany of storylines from the comics they can pull, but I think Tommy's right. I think that what we're seeing set up is this internal kind of good guy war where it's X-Factor and X-Force and all these other, you know, and X-Men trying to work out like what does the direction of mutant kind look like from here? You know, do we work with the government that tried to kill us? Do we find like an outsider's way? Are we like X-Force? Do we use Magneto's methods to achieve Xavier's dream? Or is there even another group or another path that can come forward? There's just so many of these comics that it's really exciting to think about the direction. We got a few super chats to get to here. Armand gave us £5 and said, Marvel, give me Spider-Man, the animated series 99, and my soul is yours. I will burn my firstborn child for this. I will sell my marriage for my dead aunt, anything. Damn. I liked the show.
Hell yeah.
I don't know if maybe I would offer Colton's firstborn son, but definitely not mine if I have.
Oh, I held him yesterday for the first time. Did I tell you guys about this?
You did. Yeah.
He said his first words, right? His first words were, Daddy, if they make a Spider-Man 99 series, you can give me up.
Yep. That is it.
On the altar of Rumpelstiltskin. I don't know. I love how that show ended. The show ends with Peter going into the multiverse to look for Mary Jane, and we don't find out how it ends. There was a couple last season who looked like Peter and Mary Jane, and so maybe they kind of imply they got back together.
Same universe.
Same universe.
There was also, I'll mention, there was a Spider-Man 94 comic book that was in canon that came out from Marvel that doesn't preclude them doing an animated series that erases and goes differently. But if you are curious of checking out the ongoing story that does exist and came out, I want to say last year.
And it's an amazing show, by the way. The Venom arc in that show. Mm.
Yeah. There's also that really weird Spider-Man animated series that came out right after the final season. It was like he goes to a different planet and there's
spectacular
like
spectacular Spider-Man or is it
it's almost like the same no
that was later,
it's like
an MTV one, I think.
No, it's a planet where they're like animals.
Is this a dream you had?
No. Another one you're talking about. It was on MTV.
Yeah.
It was on MTV. Okay. When y'all said MTV, I was thinking of the computer animated one.
We are. I don't know. I do not know the one you're talking about. I'm talking with you.
Okay, hold on.
Let's go to the next super chat while you look that up. Sorry to be a D-bag. We got Henry Crawford's been a member for 1 month on the Screen Crush staff tier. Thank you so much. Thank you for doing that. Watching us at the gym. First live stream I've made live. Want to give a big shout out to Tommy, my goat, since he was the best character on The Middle.
Oh, there you go. Thank you.
Nice.
I appreciate it.
And then we got two super chats from Malik for $5 each. The first one says, it was still so tough seeing Magneto's demise, even though I knew he was doomed when he mentioned he was staying behind. That is typically an indicator that you're going to bite it.
Spider-Man... Yeah, In 1999, a spin-off sequel series, Spider-Man Unlimited, where he goes to Counter-Earth.
Unlimited.
I remember that, yeah. Is that really from the same continuity, though?
It's like a loose, like it kind of is kind of in it and isn't. Got and it. He's like, he's with the Beastials and it's weird. It's fucking weird. Yeah.
That it's weird. There are gaps in my life when I lost access to television just for various reasons. So like, for instance, I didn't see X-Men the Animated Series seasons 2, 3 through 5 for years, mm-hmm. except for here and there because we lost cable. Like we couldn't afford it. And the same thing with that. In 99, I completely lost access to television. So I lost a lot of stuff then.
I thought you were talking about that year span when your parents put you in that shed. Were you not talking about
the shed year was tough. The shed year was tough, but I made my own shows then. And then we got another one here from Malik. Said, what team do we think Logan was referring to at the end? Or am I overthinking it? He was just referencing the X-Men. So let's talk about that post-credit scene. In the post-credit scene, he's wearing his black knit cap and sweater, which is from the flashback episode in season 5, where it shows him and Captain America in World War II. Interesting, he doesn't have his bone claws in that episode, even though I think the bone claws had debuted in the comics by then. They definitely had. And he's basically, it looks like, going to get his adamantium back. I got my theories, but who do you guys think he's talking about?
Well, he's headed to the Weapon X facility, I assume. So we're definitely going to get Deadpool in this episode for sure, I think.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. Cool. Also, Maverick, guy with weird M crab-shaped mask, will probably show up. I never really understand what his deal is, but he's always in Weapon X stuff. And I wonder if they might have Sabretooth there, potentially. Just normally they don't team up, but it might be like, oh, go
ahead. Is Stryker there? Is he running the show?
Not in the comics, but in the original show, there was an episode called, I love this title, Weapon X Lies in Videotape.
That's a great title.
It's a pretty good episode too. It's not like one of the all timers, but it's really, really good. It's got a great ending. In fact, I'll just spoil everything for you right now. So there's an episode where Wolverine gets sent this like weird photograph I think it's a photograph, and he starts having memories that he doesn't remember from his past that's been erased. So he and Sabretooth show up at this facility, and there they find Maverick and Silver Fox. And that's the woman that Wolverine was involved with in his dreams. And then they find this facility where they find, like, and this is a great premise, by the way, just for a movie, where they find sets of their memories, like film sets, and they're kind of janky looking and not real. And they're like, wait, this is the cabin we lived in? Like, this is what? No, wait, our memories can't be fake. And then they see a video of the scientist who implanted it. It's not Stryker, it's some like bald scientist. And they, he talks about how they implanted false memories. And all this other stuff, right? So the episode ends after they fight off this robot from the comics, whose name I can't remember. It ends with Wolverine telling Silver Fox, hey, what we had was real. Our love was real. I remember carving our names into the cabin. Like, the cabin may not have been real, but that was, because that heart was not in the cabin. And they're like, no, wasn't real. Let it go. And they leave. And then you find out outside the facility, you see a tree that he had carved their names into. So part of what he had with her was real. But it's very poetic and it's lost forever. There was another trailer for X-Men 97 that leaked that showed a lot of these people and Lady Deathstrike at a Weapon X facility. So I think that's what they're going with.
And just to mention, the name of the next episode is Weapon X Lies at DVD. So it seems like it's probably a direct sequel to that. That's not a joke. That's actually true.
It is.
It actually is.
You're right.
Wait, it was?
The next episode is. Yeah.
And DVDs, really?
Yeah, and DVD. Weapon X lies in DVD. So it's probably a direct sequel to that episode. I'm not making a joke.
No, really, the next episode
of this show. I thought you meant the next episode of X-Men, the animated series. And I was like, no, DVDs didn't exist.
And then it was Blu-ray, which is crazy. I don't know how they do that.
Yeah.
And then the next one was 4K disc. Yeah.
Then it was like
Netflix.
And then the next one was streaming services. A new age of apocalypse.
Jason Spitzer, congrats on being a member for 5 months. And Jason Spitzer is asking, how many blue polos do I own? I own 2 that fit, 2 more that don't fit, depending on how much fudge I've been hitting these days.
Yeah. I thought that was body
pants, bro.
What?
I thought that was body paint.
It used to be, yeah. No, it used to be. It is like melded to my skin, much like the adamantium of Wolverine. It's a kind of body paint. Guys, we got to knock it there. That has been a great talk. Congratulations again to Yahya Abdul-Mateen II. Congratulations to Colton for holding your son. We're really proud of you. Thank you so much. Talk to you later. Tommy. Oh, shit. Tommy.
Janet.
You got to go.
Just get the fire extinguisher. I got to go, guys. I'm so sorry.
I'll talk to you later, man. Thanks so much. Alex, are you done with that onslaught of calls you were talking about?
They still have me on hold, but Disney Plus is offering a free Mind Baby with every purchase, so I think I'm going to go for it.
Got it. We'll talk to you later. And we want to hear from you guys. What did you think of the episode? Let us know your thoughts down in the comments below. And what do you think is going to happen next on this show? And if it's your first time here, be sure to subscribe and smash that bell for alerts. For Screen Crush, I'm